the OTB Podcast Network.
8:50 this morning. I'm delighted to say Shane Murphy is with us. He's a football scientist. Shane, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
You've been involved in drawing up return to play programs for anybody who is getting back into sport now after a long period of lockdown. Before we get into that and how you got involved with that, maybe you might talk to us a little bit about your own background, because it's a really interesting story about how you ended up working in, at very elite level soccer, football.
Yeah, you know, thanks. So I did a sports science degree, as most people do. I did that in UL, and when I heard that you could be a football scientist for a football club, it was kind of intriguing to me. So I basically did everything I could to possibly to make that thing happen. So I went over to England on a sort of an internship. I kind of learned off Roy Keane, if you like, and I emailed rather than wrote about 72 clubs. And I remember two got back to me. One of them was Everton. They said no. And the other one was Cardiff. So I went over to Cardiff, spent about 8 months over there, and then came back, finished my degree. And then I was fortunate enough to go to Blackburn Rovers. And then from Blackburn, I went to Liverpool, Liverpool to Man City, and then also working for international, the Welsh international team. And then I was at Man City for about 7 years before deciding to come out and set up my own company. And then since doing that, I've been fortunate enough to continue sort of a consultancy role with Man City, but also work with the Scottish national team now. So yeah, it's going well so far.
Do you have a particular area of specialization or expertise? Sports science, obviously, it covers a multitude. But what was the bit that you did first that you got into and kind of became expert in?
I think just from obviously playing, yeah, there is quite a broad sports science, to be fair. My role would probably be S&C and sports science. So that is your gym program, but also on-field conditioning or on-pitch conditioning. So I think you become specialist in the sport that you work in most as well, because there is sort of there's niches within each sport that you need to understand, because, you know, obviously there's principles of S&C and sports science, but understanding how they fit in the game is really important. So I guess it's probably an expert in the sport of football, if anything.
And in terms of that, because I've just been listening to the Mike Quirk podcast, and the Barry Solon one particularly, is working with the Arsenal first team, just talking about how you really need to know the individual player and the psychology of them as much as the physiology, because the players can, after a game, for example, sometimes he'll be charged with bringing them out to make them run for a session to make sure that they've hit certain markers so that they know either the next day's a day off or the day after they're going to have some specific training. And if the players have just been beaten, he said sometimes they give him the finger and he goes, right, I'm not doing it today. I understand. We're going to let it go. What's that aspect of life like from your perspective, and just making sure that you have a whole person view as opposed to I've seen the GPS stats here and they're not good or they're off the charts here?
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think, like, you know, Barry, he's working with such a vast culture of players as well, coming from different backgrounds and everything else. And it is a high emotion sport, and winning matters, especially at the elite level, you know. So you will get a variety of different kind of ideas or belief systems on what we should be running or shouldn't be running. And I think that's an essence of a coach, understanding that I don't have to force everything. There's many ways to kind of get the job done, if you like. So I think that's been a bit clever, and seeing other ways around, you know, doing the same thing. Because I think if you're fixated in one way of doing it, you're going to find obstacles at some point, and it's how you work around them is really important. And I think, on the GPS sort of thing and the stats, I think sometimes technology can kind of lead us down a path that we get a bit confused by, or maybe gives us the wrong messages. And I remember when lockdown ended and the first game back, I don't know if you remember, there was a free kick and it was clearly a goal. The ball just went over the line. I think the keeper parried it into the net, and it was a clear goal for everyone could see, and even the ref saw it was a goal, but his referee's watch never registered it was a goal, so it was never given. And there for me, it shows and epitomizes how technology sometimes can be fantastic, but also can maybe get in the way and hinder a good decision.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. Without asking you to breach any professional confidences, what do you do for Man City? Like, who would you have been working with? What kind of programs, what type of things would you have been doing?
Yeah, well, when I first started, it was kind of the head up the youth development phase. So that's like your 14 to 16 age group, or 12, sorry, 16 age group. And that was a really interesting project, because they had a really strong cohort of players at the time. And the question was, how do we prepare these boys for the first team football. But obviously, first team football, as we know over the last number of years, has grown in intensity and kind of expression of physical output. So how do we prepare him for a moving target, really? And that cohort, I saw them all the way from under 14, really, all the way up into the first team. And that cohort was of your Phil Foden. That was his age group. And it was, you know, it was not just Phil. It was Jadon Sancho, it was Brahim Diaz, and many other players I worked with. And it was kind of ensuring that they had the right program, if you like, that when they get their opportunity, that they're prepared for the outputs that the Premier League, you know, has. So I guess that was the project at Man City, really, when I was there. And I was fortunate enough to work across so many different age groups, from your, say, under 12 all the way into the first team, get experience going away on first team on tours to America and working also with the women's team. So, you know, in a club, what's such an open-minded club, we'll say, I was fortunate enough to kind of work across many different age groups and different squads. So, yeah, very fortunate.
What was the answer to that question about preparing them for first team football? What was the solution to preparing them for first team football? Was there a common thread in the programs that Diaz, Foden and Sancho would have had?
Yeah. Well, what you recognise is that you kind of reverse engineer the process, if you like. So you can predict from the history, you know, where the Premier League is going, for instance, and that's what we did. We saw the trends that were happening, so we kind of, you know, pitched into the future what you can do it from a physical point of view a little bit more than anything else. Tactics and technical models may change over time and trends come into the game, but the physical stuff is a little bit more concrete in that way. And we kind of predicted where it might be, so we reverse engineered the whole process then and what needs to happen at under 15, under 16, under 18 for us to make sure we are bridging the gap physically. And then you obviously break down some of the components of the game, which is very important, and movement becomes a big thing. So it's fine having the strength and power and sort of the physical attributes maybe that you can possess and measure in a gym, but if you can't translate them onto the pitch, you're not gonna see the benefit. So it was breaking down movement. So when it's like about movements like acceleration, deceleration, jumping off one leg, turning, changing direction, crossover in front, all these positional kind of movements that are required for football or for footballers to be successful, and make sure they're part of the program and, you know, teach them every day, because movement is a skill, and a skill, if it's going to be developed, needs practice. So we had a conscious decision to make sure we were teaching movement.
As opposed to strength, sorry, this is really interesting.
Strength was part of the program also, but there's a gap, I think, between the gym and the strength and all that stuff and into the game, because you can get someone as strong as you like and that maybe helps them produce more force, but how they apply the force is so important also, and how they apply the force is denoted really a little bit by their movement capabilities, because if they don't move well, if they're not coordinated beings, they can be as strong as they want to do, as they want, but they can't coordinate that onto the pitch, because strength is great, but strength with coordination and power development in the most way is the best way. You see those sort of slim guys who can do massive output on a bike, for instance, and just to make it very simple. And it's the coordination of their power and the coordination of their timing of their muscles and the firing, which exerts the force. Now, if you were to get them to squat, they wouldn't be able to squat half as heavy, but how can they translate their performance onto the bike? And it's a lot to do with movement and coordination and that sort of thing.
Well, it's just like, and not to talk about any individuals, but like Phil Foden looks very slight compared to, I guess I'm trying to get to the point, like 10, 15 years ago, there's a possibility that they wouldn't have put somebody like Foden or Grealish in the team when they put Grealish in the team, because he's too slight, he's too skinny, he won't be able to withstand the rigours of it. But actually, if the focus has been on movement and getting out of trouble and being able to glide, then you don't spend all the time bulking him up, because ultimately he's going to grow into his body. Part of the aging process will look after a lot of that stuff, as opposed to the movement stuff, which if you get that in early, then he's going to have that base rock forever.
Exactly. Yeah, agreed. And I think we're learning more and more about that and how that translates to performance. I think there's been misconceptions before about what physicality is. And sometimes we think it's stature or muscle mass or size. But physicality, you know, presents itself in many ways. And in a game like football, I mean, rugby's different, of course, different sports are different, but football is not about that. You know, if you went through the Man City team who dominated the best league in the world, pretty much, you know, go through that team and you'll see they're not big guys. They're not, you know, they're strong and they're efficient and they can move well. but yeah, they're not heavy guys, you know. They're but there's a reason for that, I guess.
Like, we've seen obviously Foden, who's an unbelievably gifted footballer, but from your perspective, did you see an equally gifted athlete when it came to his physical attributes?
No, like everyone, he had to work. He worked on everything. You know, he was gifted, but Phil was the most determined man I ever met. You know, he would, in a yo-yo test, he would run till he dropped dead. You know, he would run till he got sick. He just never gave up. He always had the ball at his feet. He had the mentality. It's incredible. You know, I loved the game. He worked on everything. You see posts he put on Instagram now. Like, his house is not complete, but his backyard has got goalposts and AstroSurf set up. So that's the first thing that got set up. Not his garden or his, you know, his windows or his house or his car. It was the house, and the other was the goalpost and the Astro at the back of the garden is what went up first. You know what I mean? This guy lives and breathes football.
Can I ask then, obviously it's a vastly different game and there's simply more physicality and more brute force required in Gaelic football, for example. But have you seen a situation in GAA where they've gone too far with the weights and that actual application of certain aspects of strength and the sort of exercises you're talking about with Manchester City, that GAA is lagging behind a bit on that front?
I don't know. I think if you look at the GAA, it's definitely increased over the years. There's definitely gone faster, quicker. Athletes are more stronger, robust, everything else. But I do think there is, and I'm sure there is an element of movement required as well. I mean, if you look at the most extreme ends of the sport, you know, catching and feeling a ball with forces coming behind you, have to land on one leg, turn and you know, score or lay off a ball or whatever it might be, requires a lot of good movement efficiency. So they have to be practiced, of course, but there's always room for strength and power. You know, I think sometimes when you talk about these things, it sounds like we're trying to polarize them and say one is better than the other. We shouldn't be doing one, we shouldn't be doing the other. I think it's recognizing the athletes in front of you and where the biggest bang for, you know, the biggest performance gap is. And that's the most important thing. And then look at the sport. What does the sport require us to be? You know, some sports, you know, it's a physical game. So, having a bit more mass does help football GAA, you know, because there is that more contact than there is in soccer. You know what I mean? So I think if we're totally tilted towards just lifting heavy weights and not considered about movement, then maybe we are missing a trick. But it's not that it's problematic in its own right.
You've been involved in drawing up a return to play plan for the GAA, and that's essentially why we're talking to you this morning. There were significant injuries, were there, after the last return to play? What was the impetus behind coming up with this?
Yeah, I think that was a big driver. I mean, you look across the whole world of sport, really, and the Bundesliga released a study to show that after a lockdown, I think in the first game, 20% of the injuries in that season almost happened in that first game back. And that is just a real indication that, you know, how we train and how we prepare for sport really matters. And, you know, if you're doing a lot of, say, fitness type of work, which, you know, I would say is running and straight line stuff, and you're not doing much conditioning, which is the other side of it, which is the more sport-specific or task-specific conditioning, which you can only get really with teams and stuff like that. I think you're exposed, and we saw the injuries happen in other sports as well. I think there was no different for maybe DJ in many ways. And I think what also happens is you got players dying to play and back playing, and they're very excited and everything else, and everything's ready. And coaches really wanting to coach. And you got that perfect storm of high energy and being tuned too much too early can lead to injuries, basically. And I think the message from us really is and there's PDS on the GAA Learning website. It's a fantastic resource. The program's on there. The tips of how to return back to training is on there. And it just gives you a whole host of things you should look out for. And it doesn't give you drills or sets and reps and all that necessarily. It's just more tips for coaches to take autonomy and really kind of get some key principles across in their coaching. And yeah, that is the premise of the Be Ready to Play, is to ensure that people are prepared as best they can for training, to reduce injuries as much as possible and keep people playing and enjoying the sport that, you know, they've longed for so long.
Have the GAA players got enough time to get up to speed and avoid those injuries before the league?
Yeah, I think so. So the club players really have a, we've this Be Ready to Play program has been running now for 10 weeks and it's going to continue to run for a long period of time. So anyone can log into this, and there's youth, there's adult, there's advanced programs, you know. So there's three programs across male and female and for different sports. If, you know, it doesn't matter if you're hurling or football, there's a program in there for you. And, you know, you can start to the start, and maybe a familiarization a few weeks might help you as well. But that's that athletic development, which is designed by a lot more people than just myself and Annie, who does the youth stuff. You know, Des Ryan and at Setanta College and Liam Hennessy, and also in the GAA, there's been such input from so many great people who know exactly what they're talking about. So the program was a holistic kind of decision to make. And, you know, on there is everything you need. So the athletic development program is like four units. So it's got strength and power, it's got speed and agility, it's got endurance, and it's got stability and mobility. And it talks you through when you should do those programs and how often you should do them in a week. And I think if people are doing those Be Ready to Play programs and then they are following the guidelines, I think there's a lot more less chance of injury happening. And you don't really want that. You don't want to take this one big step forward and have to take two backwards. So it's really just the analogy I'd probably use is, like, you know, if you haven't ran in a long time, it's just a silly analogy, is that you wouldn't go out and run your fastest lap or your biggest distance in the first run. You take your time. And that intuition that we all have should come into the coaching and even into the players. Just be steady with the progress. Take your time. Enjoy it, of course, but, you know, there's no need to break records in week one or week two, you know.
Yeah. Shane, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. That's really fascinating stuff.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.